Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomé River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I'd like to thank you so much for putting up with me for these 2 hours. It's just a good thing we have a really, really good guest on, because I guess altogether I might have 75 words in my vocabulary. I know back during the bean field, me and old James used to double up, pool our vocabulary, because we had to have Winston Smith on. He was edumacated. That guy was, he really was. He was a wordsmith. We used to gang up on him with our 50, 75 word vocabulary. So with that said, we have not only an intellectual guy here, a professor, we also have a warrior. The only bad thing, like we say, is some things don't change. He just gets held in the swords. We're going to have to go to the bank, get a bank loan to get new swords. But you know what? He's getting more Yankees per sword than he used to. You know how you got a car, you get X miles to the gallon. Well, the bitter end of getting is Yankee per sword has increased a little bit. This last week, though, it dropped back down again. So we got to figure out what to do there. So anyway, how you doing tonight there, Bitter Ender?
I'm doing okay, Mr. Eduardo.
Yes,
how
sir.
Are you doing?
Pretty good. I got some chocolate here. Get ready to eat some chocolate and shut my mouth and let you do the history, brother.
All right. I thought for our listeners today we would have a book review. And I'm going to read some passages from an article that was published by American Renaissance. Jared Taylor, head of American Renaissance, and did a book review, and the title is The Truth Face of the Great Emancipator. And it's a book by Philip Magnus and Sebastian Page, and it's called Colonization After Emancipation, Lincoln and the Movement for Black Resettlement. And so what I would like to do, and we always try to do on this Confederate History Hour, is give our listeners the facts to defeat the lies and misinformation that are put out there as real history, which they're not. It's propaganda most of the time. And I'm not putting down our listeners, because I believed a lot of this crapola when I was in elementary school. And, you know, social studies, oh, the war was about slavery. And I remember in fifth grade, we had a teacher, Mrs. Williams. I mean, she was a Southerner from Williamson County, lived on a farm just right outside of Nashville. And the suggestion in the book was that the fifth graders memorize Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. Well, I didn't know back then what horse manure Lincoln's Gettysburg Address really was. And we had on one of our programs, we had a comparison between Lee's farewell address to the troops after the surrender at Appomattox, and what an eloquent piece of writing that was, and of deep emotion and praising the men that had suffered so much through 4 years of war, and then contrasted that with Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, which was basically lies and misinformation, had very little to do with the troops. But it sounded good, and everybody thought this was such a great piece of writing, and they talked about how Lincoln said more in, I don't know, 20 minutes or whatever it took to give that, than this famous orator that there was there at the dedication of the National Cemetery in Gettysburg. And this fella, Edward, I got a Biden moment, can't remember his last name. Anyway, he talked for 2 hours. And they said Lincoln's 20-minute address was much better than all that put together. Anyway, so he is held up as a great hero, and Lincoln is, not the other orator. And it's really frustrating to me for these so-called conservatives on CNN and, well, there are no conservatives on, Fox News, so-called conservatives. There are no conservatives on CNN and NBC and all these other lamestream media. But they talk about how rotten the federal government is and how corrupt it is and how it torpedoed President Trump in his first term in office and the bureaucracy and everything. And then they turn right around and praise Lincoln. Oh, he saved the nation. He saved the nation. No, he didn't. He destroyed it. And all the things that you're griping about, this federal dictatorship that we have and the imperial presidency, that came from Lincoln. And yet they don't understand that, even as, you know, like Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and the late Rush Limbaugh and and even Tucker Carlson, but he grew up in California, so he never got any true Southern history. But they all praise Lincoln. And this book then really pulls the plug on Lincoln and what he thought about blacks. They said that Lincoln is revered as one of the greatest heroes in American history. Like, you know, his face is on Mount Rushmore, and he's got this memorial in Washington, D.C., which I call a pagan temple, and it's what it looks like, and it's got him sitting on this throne like this Greek god or Roman god, Bull Crapus Maximus, the Roman god.
Sitting on a commode.
Yeah, the Roman god of lies and misinformation. Exactly. You know, they just need a big roll of toilet paper off to the side there.
And, Mount
I've been in D.C.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's when I was stationed at the Marine base there at Quantico, and never went by the Lincoln Memorial. I could see that thing when you're going across the 14th Street Bridge, and I said, that is the most revolting thing, building that kind of Greek, the Roman pagan temple to somebody that destroyed our Constitution. But anyway, so he is revered, and it says here there are more schools named for Lincoln than for George Washington. And but today he was probably even more admired as the great emancipator who freed the slaves. And of course, we know he didn't. The Emancipation Proclamation didn't free any slaves in the United States. The Emancipation Proclamation said it applied only to those states in rebellion against the Union, which meant the Confederacy, where he had no power. It's like it wasn't passed by Congress anyway. It's like an executive order. And it would be like President Trump signing an executive order and applying it to communist China or North Korea. He does that, and they tell him, you go away, yellow hair. You don't have that over here. Go away. And so, you know, it's an executive order. It wasn't a law. So, and the thing about the emancipation was that there were five states that were still in the Union that it didn't, where slavery was legal, and it didn't apply to them. So most of Lincoln's things that he said and did were just straight out organic bull fertilizer, and it was, you know, just for show, because he didn't really believe in much of anything he said. It just sounded good. So, the great emancipator and Lincoln's views of blacks is really an embarrassment for historians when they really dig into it. If they gave the true history. And his speech on June 26, 1857, was his explanation for he opposed admitting the Kansas Territory as a slave state. And Lincoln said, and these are quotes in this book, there's a natural disgust in the minds of nearly all white people to the idea of indiscriminate amalgamation of the white and black races. A separation of the races is the only perfect preventative of amalgamation. But an immediate separation is impossible. The next best thing is to keep them apart where they are not already together. And then, of course, that passage from his debate with Stephen Douglas when he was running for the Senate in 1858, it's just as straightforward. Lincoln says, I will say then that I am not, nor have I ever been, in favor of bringing about in any way the social and political equality of the white and black races, that I am not, nor have ever been, in favor of making voters or jurors of Negroes, nor of qualifying them to hold office, nor to intermarry with white people. And I will say in addition to this that there is a physical difference between the white and black races, which I believe will forever forbid the two races living together on terms of social and political equality. So Lincoln did believe, though, that slavery was immoral and should be abolished, but he believed that the only solution to the Negro problem, as he called it, was racial separation. And he was active in the Illinois branch of the American Colonization Society, which was founded in 1816 to colonize free blacks by sending them out of the United States, either to back to Africa, or there were several spots in the Caribbean that they tried to set up these colonies for blacks in the United States and get them out of the United States. In his first message to Congress on December 3rd, 1861, Lincoln called for a budget to settle blacks outside of the United States, and the Congress voted $600,000 for this purpose. And if you want to put that in perspective, the entire federal budget the previous year had been just a little over $80 million. So that was a big chunk of the federal budget to get blacks out of this country. In 1862, now we got a war going on, 1862, and the Confederates are ripping and roaring up and down the Shenandoah Valley, you know, Jackson's Valley campaign. John Mosby's ripping them a new rear end in Northern Virginia. And the Battle of 7 Days, McClellan was defeated.
We have to go to a quick break, Gene.
We will come back after the break and explain all the rest of the ideas that Lincoln came up with.
I didn't know if Bitter Ender heard that correct or not. I hope I didn't interrupt the old Bitter Ender. We'll be right back in a minute, folks.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
Smell of napalm in the morning. Smells like victory.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I'd like to interrupt this, Gene, just for a second. I have these store of books that I keep forgetting to publish them. We have one great book by Michael Andrew Grissom and Christopher Eric McBroom called The Southern Book of Quotes. Gene is heavily involved in that. In fact, you can get that book, I think, at the Forest Home. I'm not sure. Can they get that book at the Forest Home, Gene?
Oh, yes, sir. We sell a bunch of those there. Yeah. Okay. It's a great book. And Mike Grissom is a good friend of mine. He said, if you go to Bartlett's famous quotations, all the quotes are Northerners, you know, Thoreau and Longfellow and of course, Lincoln, yes. Lincoln. And very few of them are Southerners at all. But this book is all Southerners, and it's arranged in chronological order. It starts with the Constitution Convention and talks about what the Southerners said about the Constitution and their fear of a monarchy being reestablished in this country. And then it goes up through the war, and it's got quotes from Lee and Jackson and Forrest and Patrick Claiborne. And then it comes up to modern times, and he's got quotes by Will Rogers and Elvis and Minnie Pearl and all sorts of people like that. But it's a great book. I enjoy reading it, just flipping it open anywhere and start reading. And it's all interesting, no matter what time period you hit. And it's not like a book you have to start at chapter one and go all the way to the end to find out who done it. It's just very interesting reading anytime. And then it's also got a listing by names in the back book, the book, alphabetically. So if you want to find out what Lee said, go to the L's and find Robert E. Lee, page 137 to about 157 in there, and you can look up people that you're interested in. So, yeah, it would be a good book for the listeners to get in touch with you and get a copy of those. It's a good read.
Yes, because either one will go.
We'd love to have them come out, get a tour of the forest home, and get a book, too. Okay.
It would go to a great cause. I'm telling you what, I'm not trying to be sacrilegious, but I would put this book next to your family Bible when you get through reading your Bible. I mean, because this is, I mean, after all, people, the Southern, we were considered the Bible Belt at one time, and I'm not like to say, I'm not trying to say, oh, this is equal to the Bible, but it's from a Bible, a God-fearing people in the South. It talks about them a lot. It's a great book. If you'd like one, see Gene, see me. I have another one here. I'll make a quick comment about this. It's called The Cult of Clergy. And the reason I brought this up, I meant to bring this up on the second hour we've had Paul Fromm, because Paul Fromm edited this book. It's a small book. It's really a booklet. You could read it probably in an hour. Even I can. But, it talks about this Jew by the name of Clergy. And his mother was Japanese. His dad was a Jew. And he kind of hated himself because he was mixed. He hated the white people with a purple passion. He got together with what a shocker, other the rich Jews, and they put this plan together about how they were going to destroy white people in the world. And the way they did, the blueprint for that is in this thing called The Cult of Clergy. He said they're going to tear the national borders down, infiltrate our schools. He said they were going to put blacks, the way they were going to elevate blacks, because they don't have the brain power to get into, you know, the doctor, lawyer, Indian chief, nurses, whatever. So they can't make electricians or carpenters because they just don't have it, pure blacks. He said they were going to elevate them through sports. They were going to elevate them through sports, make them rich athletes so they could interbreed and marry white women. Well, I put it this way. If you want to see a laboratory experiment of the clergy plan where it came through, watch a national watch a football game, the National Football League, and you'll show it. We saw one last night where one of their big stars with this big black buck married this beautiful white woman with a bunch of inbred kids. I said that's a clergy plan. It's come to fruition. So if you want a copy of the clergy plan, you will come to Flip River Radio. If you want a copy of the Southern Book of Quotes, come to the Forest Home with Gene, or come to Blood River Radio. So that's it for the books. If you get these books, you'll be supporting me and Gene. If you'd like to do that, we got some other ones too. The Dark Medicine. If you'd like to support us, go ahead and get that. Plus, it was a great education. I can guarantee you really enjoy the Southern Book of Quotes. The clergy plan will just make you mad, but it will educate you, and it will show you what he. It's amazing to me, Gene. They talked about this 110 years ago, and here it is in living color in front of our eyes. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. But shut up, Gene. Go right back to you, brother.
Now we're doing that book review, the book by Philip Magnus and Sebastian Page, called Colonization After Emancipation, Lincoln and the Movement for Black Resettlement. And we were talking about how Lincoln is thought of as the great emancipator, but he wanted blacks out of this country. He wanted them colonized or sent back to Africa or colonized at these colonies in the Caribbean. So August of 1862, now the war is going on, but this is so important to Lincoln that he also appointed a commissioner, James Mitchell, the commissioner of immigration, with a mission to organize and locate colonies, superintended the immigration settlement of colonization of colored people of African descent under the direction of the president. So those were Lincoln's words of what he gave the power to Mitchell. And they tried a couple of colonies during the war. All this is going on. In the area of Central America. So there were two places they wanted to try. There was a place in now what is Panama, and I hope I pronounce this right. It's Chiriqui, Chiriqui, a region of what is now Panama, and then also one on the Isle of the Ile de Vaisse, which is 6.5 miles off the coast of Haiti. And the first one was a Philadelphia businessman by the name of Ambrose Thompson, who had acquired development rights in the 1850s to several thousand square miles of Cherokee and what was then the Republic of New Grenada. And the idea was he thought there was a lot of coal there and he was going to make a fortune selling it to the Navy, but turned out the coal wasn't any good. wasn't the right grade that the Navy ships needed. So then he would invest his coal profits, he thought, into cotton, sugar, and rice plantations that would sustain a large colony of freed blacks. And by late 1862, over 13,000 freed slaves had signed up for the colonization. But the project failed before they had arrived. The coal turned out, like we said, to be a low-grade lignite, and that was no use to the Navy. And it also appears that Thompson had misused colonization funds to pay off his personal debt. So that one went down the tube. And then what really sank the project was the stiff opposition by Central Americans who feared, in their words, a dreadful deluge of Negro immigration from the United States. And Luis Melania, the diplomat in Washington who represented New Grenada, said it would never accept, and he called it a plague of which the United States desired to rid themselves. And he even threatened to resist. Yeah, they even threatened to resist colonization by force. And now the Ildivashi project got further, but it was also a disaster. Bernard Koch, or Koch, I guess it is, a cotton exporter, had a 10-year lease on the Haitian island to develop cotton plantations. And Lincoln signed a contract with him and a group of financial backers with the expectation of colonizing at least 5,000 freed blacks. And they also promised to develop infrastructure, build housing, schools, and give each family 12 acres that came there and pay them to grow cotton. The initial U.S. government obligation was to pay the colonists passage to the island. And because the island was undeveloped, the land had to be cleared of dense vegetation, which Koch provided no proper tools or draft animals to pull plows and break the ground. And the corn and potato crops failed in a difficult climate and badly prepared soil. Smallpox and a painful flu-borne disease broke out, for which there was little medical help. And over 100 of these colonists died. And the rest of them went into revolt, drove Koch off the island, and Lincoln sent a rescue ship in March of 1864 to get him out of there. What few survivors were left and returned to America. But Lincoln did not give up. His commissioner on immigration, James Mitchell, had extended negotiations with the British about sending blacks to two of their New World colonies, British Honduras, which is now Belize, and British Guiana, which is now Guyana. And they also negotiated a colonization treaty with the Dutch to send free blacks to their colony, which is just east of Guyana. And Lincoln was just as serious about these efforts as the earlier ones that had failed. Now, this is 1864, and the war is really going on then. But Lincoln's efforts are scarcely known. The historians cover up for him. The authors of this book asked the question, why was the attempted colonization of the West Indies escaped almost all historical attention? And they're the only two historians who have seriously researched the question. And they found out that Lincoln really wanted these blacks out of America and get them anywhere, and he was trying to put them on these islands in the Caribbean. They spoke about approaching the British first in July of 1862, even before the immigration office was set up. And the commissioner, James Mitchell, that we were talking about, this is how Mitchell described President Lincoln's reply, and quote, "If Lincoln wants our Negroes and will do better by them than we can, I say let her have them, and may God bless her," talking about England. And Great Britain had freed its own slaves in 1834. And here's the interesting thing about that. All the British colonies had slaves wherever they were in the world. And you know, the sun never sets on the British Empire. So we'll get back to that and talk about what the British did.
Yes, sir. Be right back, folks.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty.
You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
News this hour from Town Hall. I'm Mary Rose. The nation's unemployment rate increased 4.3% in August as hiring slowed way down. Government revisions also show the economy lost jobs in June, the first monthly decline since the pandemic. Who's to blame for the weak jobs report?
U.S. employers added just 22,000 jobs last month. Democrats blame Trump policies for damaging the economy. The president targeted the Fed for not lowering its benchmark interest rate. Speaking with SRN News, economist Richard Stern says the Trump tariffs are dampening.
With the lack of confidence that businesses have in making investment decisions.
But he also said residual Biden administration policies are just as much to blame.
The Biden administration continued to expand regulations in every sector of the economy, making it hard for businesses that already exist to continue functioning and being in business, employing people.
Richard Stern with the Heritage Foundation, George Williams, Washington.
President Trump has signed an executive order renaming the Department of Defense as the Department of War.
We won the First World War. We won the Second World War. We won everything before that and in between. And then we decided to go woke and we changed the name to Department of Defense. So we're going Department of War.
Congress must approve the name change. Strong, severe thunderstorms are making their way across parts of the Northeast today, putting over 25 million people on alert. A severe thunderstorm has been issued for parts of the Northeast from Maryland to Maine. This includes most of the Interstate 95 corridor, including Baltimore, Philly, New York City, and Boston. The G20 summit will be held in Miami next year. President Trump made the announcement yesterday alongside Miami Mayor Francis Suarez and said it will take place at the Trump's Doral Resort. Trump said the meeting of the world leaders will be held at cost and will receive no profit from either the State Department or foreign government. More on these stories at townhall.com.
We all know the importance of good daily habits, whether it's getting outside, getting your steps in, stretching those limbs, or eating right. Doing it on the regular is key. That's why if you're dealing with everyday aches and pains, it's time to bring Relief Factor into your life. Head over to ReliefFactor.com or give them a call at 800-4-RELIEF and get their three-week quick start for just $19.95. Relief Factor is the daily supplement that fights pain naturally. Developed by a team of doctors, it uses a special formula of four natural ingredients. Relief Factor doesn't just mask the pain, it helps reduce or eliminate it. In fact, the longer you take Relief Factor, the more effective it is to get your days going without any pain. So if we get you out of pain by taking their three-week quick start, it's only $19.95, less than a dollar a day. Simply call 800-4-RELIEF, 800 the number 4-RELIEF. Wherever you're having pain, neck, shoulders, hips, knees, don't let it keep you from living the life you want to live. Make Relief Factor part of your daily routine. Go to ReliefFactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF. That's 1-800 the number 4-RELIEF.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Dear Blood River Radio family, without further ado, we're going to go back to the bitter ender. He wears so many hats. He's wearing his professor of history hat tonight. So if you will, pay close attention. There might be a test this week, folks. You never know. So go back.
Not one, but two blue books and a number two pencil. So
yes, that's right. And you know
how many
what?
Times have we heard that?
And the bitter ender will have not a sword and a bullwhip, so you better not fail that test. Go ahead, bitter ender. Professor bitter ender.
We'd been talking about Lincoln's resettlement plan for getting all the blacks off the American continent. And we were talking right before the break about working out some kind of deal with the British and their colonies at Guyana and British Honduras. And some of the colonies that they had over here in the Western Hemisphere. And Britain had freed their slaves in 1834, and the problem was this led to labor shortage. Oh, and I wanted to bring out a point here of how the British did this. The British did not fight a civil war over slavery. They simply paid the slave owners for their investment in the slaves. And that's what the South had offered to do long before the 13th Amendment freed the slaves, and long before Lincoln's emancipation, and long before the first shot was fired in our war for Southern independence. They told these Yankee abolitionists that were so wacko crazy and sending terrorists down here to kill us. They said, look, if you want to abolish slavery, that's fine. We're all for it. Just pay the slave owners for their investment. It would be like today, the green wackos and crazies around the country saying, okay, you've got to get rid of all of your diesel tractors. You cannot use diesel tractors anymore on plowing thousands of acres because that exhaust is polluting the air and, you know, it might give our little children, you know, bad respiratory, all this stuff like that. And they say, okay, well, pay us. We got millions of dollars invested in this farm equipment. You can't, a small farm operation can't make it today. You have to have these big mega farms. And we say, no, we're not going to pay you. You just need to park all your diesel-powered, gasoline-powered equipment on Friday afternoon and then switch over to all electric equipment by Monday morning. And they're going, you're crazy. And basically, that's what the Southerners said. You want us to give up this investment that we have and just say, poof, that's it, but you're not going to reimburse us for it? And the difference was in why the Northerners and the liberals and the, you know, the black so-called historians can't understand this, that the South was an agricultural section of the country. Up north was industry. And they could make 10 or 12 little widgets and sell 8 or 9 of them the next day, and they always had a steady income. But if you have an agricultural economy, you have to plant a crop and hope it gets enough rain, and hope it doesn't get too much rain and wash the seed out of the ground. And you don't get any income from that crop until about 6 months later when it's harvested. And if you had a bad year, then you can't plant a few more things in November or December. It's too late in the year. You've got to wait till the next spring to plant. So what are you going to do over the winter? Well, you go to the bank and you say, I need a loan to get through the winter and buy seed for next year. And they say, well, okay, what's your collateral? And they say, well, I've got a farm. And they say, no, I don't want a farm. That's why I work in a bank. Well, I've got a house. And they go, no, nope, I got a bigger house than you have. What else have you got? And they say, well, I've got a certain number of slaves. He said, all right, put them up as collateral to back up your loan. And if you don't get a crop next year, then you're going to have to sell off some of this to pay off your loan to the bank. So to tell people you have to give up your collateral to just for, you know, because the Northern abolitionists said so. They said, the heck with you. We can't do that. We can't survive in an agricultural society. And the other thing that they failed to mention is that there was not a single slave ship that came to this country that flew a Confederate flag, and there was not a single slave ship. There were plenty of them that flew U.S. flags, and British and Dutch and Portuguese and Spanish brought them over here. Not a single ship was flying a Confederate flag that came over here with slaves, and not a single slave ship was chartered out of a southern port like Charleston or New Orleans or Mobile or Wilmington. They were all chartered out of northern ports, and the biggest slave trading port city and the most ships were registered in Providence, Rhode Island. And there were slave trading ships that were registered to owners in New York and Philadelphia and Boston and New Bedford, all up and down the northern part of our eastern coast. And another thing they don't want to mention to you today is that these people that made huge profits off of the slave trade late in life got, a conscience, and they thought, oh, I've made all this money about bringing these poor Africans over here and dumping them off and made money off of it. They got a pang of consciousness and donated huge amounts of money to these Ivy League schools. So Harvard and Yale and Brown and NYU and Princeton, all of these big hotshot liberal Northeastern schools were founded on money that came from the slave trade. Or if they weren't founded on it, they expanded it tremendously on money that came from the slave trade from these ship owners that lived in the Northeast.
How much they give Ole Miss, Gene? How much they give you? How much money do they give to Ole Miss, Mississippi State, University of Alabama? I bet they got nary a penny.
Well, if you subtract one from one and you get zero, that's the amount that they gave to the University of Mississippi or Alabama or the University of Tennessee or whatever. No, it all went to the elitist schools in the Northeast. And they were greatly expanded, if not actually founded, on money that came from the slave trade. But they kind of skip over that part today. They don't want you to hear that.
Yeah, that's inconvenient.
So we're going back to...
It's impolite. It's polite, not polite to mention that, Gene.
Well, it's called lies by omission.
Yes.
They're not really lying. They just don't tell you the whole truth. And that's known as lies by omission. They just kind of skip over that part.
Well, the last thing they skip over, Gene, and you know that one of the biggest slave firms there in Rhode Island was owned by the men that wear the tiny hats, our Jewish brethren.
Yes, they were. They were the leaders in that. They owned the ships. They owned the business. And that's where a lot of the Jewish money came from back then, was in the slave trade. And it's always interesting to me, the hypocrisy of it, that a lot of the Jews today put money in. Well, they were the founders for the NAACP. It was the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. But the founders, and you can see the pictures of the first group that got together, and they put their names down there. And it's not O'Reilly and Smith and Jones. It's more like, you know, the Jewish names that got that started. And, you know, look at today, the person that throws all this money into these protests and anti-American protests and everything like that is George Soros, who is actually a Jew. His real name is Schwartz. So the Jewish businessmen in the Northeast were the ones that made huge profits off of the slave trade. And that they talk about today how terrible the Southerners were and all of this stuff like that. And so many of the Jews are pointing their finger at us but say, hey, Bubba, you were the ones that made the money on bringing them over here. And they formulate all kind of fancy stories of made-up history, and they claim that, some of the dumb things they said, like the South lost the war because the Southern soldiers couldn't load a rifle with one hand and beat the blacks with the other hand, you know, just idiotic stuff off the wall. So anyway, we're talking about the British, and they backed out on this. They didn't want the... Colonial Office was actually eager for workers because after they banned slavery, the slaves left and they didn't have anybody to work these plantations in the Caribbean. In 1863 and 64, the prospects for colonization seemed so good that planters in Honduras and Guyana were looking forward to the arrival of freedmen to help with the harvest. They never came, though. By April of 1864, Guyana was even offering cash in addition to free transportation. The one problem was the British Foreign Office. Even late in the war, when a Union victory seemed all but certain, Britain was worried about future relations with a potentially independent Confederate States of America. The diplomats were afraid Southerners would be angry if Britain had enticed the former slaves to leave the country. And the Foreign Office insisted that labor recruiters seek blacks in no part of the United States south of Philadelphia, a condition that made the recruitment much more difficult. And here was another thing that they won't tell you. We were talking about what a phony piece of paper Lincoln's Emancipation was. Lincoln admitted that it was not about freeing the slaves, because it didn't. It only applied to the states in the Confederacy. But we will get back to a couple of the things that he said the Emancipation was really written for. We'll close out our last segment after the break.
So, okay, wait. Be right back, folks.
Bypass the mainstream narrative with Liberty News Radio at libertynewsradio.com. Engage with charismatic hosts live or on demand. We cover the crucial news focused on God, family, and country. News that other networks simply refuse to use. Think of LNR's hard-hitting news and podcasts at your fingertips anytime, anywhere. Join us at libertynewsradio.com. Empower your day with the truth, because the truth will set you free. libertynewsradio.com.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
Being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Hello, Blood River Radio family. You know, me and Gene during the break, we were just talking about how some things change, the more they stay the same. The Jews and their very lucrative slave trading business in the United States until after Lincoln's War. Now they lost their slave trading business here, but now they're over in human trafficking in Ukraine. It's well known that Jews, Israel, is very, very heavily involved in the Ukraine, those European states, because they're very well known for having beautiful women. But they traffic a lot. There's tons of human sex trafficking come out of the Eastern Europe into Israel. And they're also heavily involved with Red China. And it's not just China, folks. It's still red. They're communist China. And they deal with a lot of your organs that are transported around the world come out of Red China via AKA Israel. So anyway, that's just the Jews, always the Jews, always the Jews. Anyway, back to you, Bitterender.
Okay, we were talking right before the break about Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation and this book about Lincoln and how he really didn't want the blacks on the North American continent in America, and went through all of these procedures to try to establish these colonies in Central America and get them out of here. And going back to that emancipation one more time, Lincoln even admitted it wasn't about freeing the blacks. It was a war measure. And he even admitted it was a war measure to try to keep Britain out of the war on the side of the Confederacy. Because you have to remember, the American colonies had no way of defeating Britain and winning our independence had it not been for the French coming into the war and fighting on our side. And Lincoln was afraid that the same thing was going to happen in the South, that England would come in on and use their navy to break the blockades around the South and maybe even send troops down from Canada to invade the United States from the North while the South was giving them hell on the battlefield in the South. And he didn't want Britain coming in the war on the side of the Confederacy. And he used this emancipation to say, well, look, we're fighting to free the slaves, and England got rid of slavery in 1834. So if you help the Confederacy, you're trying to reestablish slavery. And Britain didn't want to do that, although the majority of the British people were pulling for the South because they saw the South as the underdog, and they were sick and tired of the Yankee arrogance and conceit and business grabbing people that you had talked about out of the New England ports, taking British shipping trade away from them. And there was a real hardship in England during the war because they couldn't get cotton. And a lot of the mills were shut down. A lot of the British workers, the poor people in England, were suffering because they couldn't get cotton out of the blockade in the South, or it was greatly reduced. And the poor were out of work. And so they were sympathetic to the South and hoped the South was going to win the war, just to tweak the Yankees' eagle's nose a little bit. But it was the British upper level of the government, Queen Victoria and Lord Palmerston. They didn't want to get in conflict with the United States because they were afraid it would hurt the British merchant marine all over the world. And they were looking at money, not about the right of a country to be free and independent. They were concerned about the British pocketbook and not about the Southerners trying to win their independence. And the other thing that Lincoln wanted to do with the emancipation, he was hoping that once this was announced and this information got out and spread across the South, there would be a huge slave uprising in the South against the white women and children that were left behind while the husbands and brothers and fathers were off in the Confederate Army fighting hundreds and hundreds of miles away from their homes. And that if the word got out to the Confederate armies, the Army of Tennessee, the Army of Northern Virginia, that these slave uprisings were going on in the South, the Confederate soldiers would desert the Army and go back home to protect their family and their children. And this was a real threat. Remember the slave uprising on Haiti, and the slaves went after the French colonists and chased them not only out of the towns, but back up into the jungle in the mountains and used machetes and axes and any kind of tools they had to kill not only the French colonists, the men, but kill the women and children as well. And that's what Lincoln was hoping was going to happen in the South. Of course, it never did. The slaves in the South, in many instances, would stand up to defend the white owners and the white homes, and as well as their homes, when the Yankee army came in there. They were stealing from everybody, black and white, and taking the food. And these blacks weren't stupid. They take all their food, they're going to starve. And so right here in Nashville, the slaves at the Belle Meade plantation with the Harding family, the Yankee army came out of Nashville to take whatever they could from the Harding plantation there at Belle Meade. And the blacks came after them and stood out there and challenged them to try to take something. And they were holding pitchforks and scythes and axes and machetes. And the Union soldiers said, we better go somewhere else to try to rob them. And the same thing happened up north of Nashville at Two Rivers Plantation with the McGavick family. And Randall McGavick had been mayor of Nashville. And the McGavick slaves stood out there and stopped the Union soldiers from robbing the farm there and the smokehouse and all the food from the McGavick family. So Lincoln's plan for a slave uprising didn't really work. And so getting down to the end of the war, and a lot of people say, well, Lincoln changed. He you know, he had a different idea about the blacks, and he didn't really feel that way by the end of the war. But that's not so. There was a peace conference between at Hampton Roads, Virginia, in the Chesapeake Bay there, with Confederate representatives in February of 1865. Now, the war's winding down. Lincoln invited the Confederates to stop fighting, rejoin the Union, defeat the 13th Amendment, which had freed the slaves, and keep their slaves if they would just stop the fighting and rejoin the Union. Lincoln even admitted at that conference, the Hampton Roads Conference, that the Emancipation Proclamation was just a war measure, that courts might well find it unconstitutional. Lincoln consistently put the interests of whites in preserving the Union far above the interests of blacks, slave or free. And he wrote to Horace Greeley back in August of 62, while the war was well underway, and Lincoln said, and this was one of his more famous quotes, he said, "If I could save the Union without freeing any slaves, I would do it. And if I could save the Union by freeing all the slaves, I would do it. And if I could save the Union by freeing some and leaving the others alone, I would also do that. And what I do about slavery and the colored race, I do because I believe it helps to save the Union." So that was Lincoln's war effort or objective very early on in the war. And it's said that, you know, Lincoln didn't want to talk that much about slavery. He wanted to mix the whites and blacks together. But Lincoln was deeply pessimistic about the prospects of blacks and whites living together. And the 1863 draft riots in New York City only deepened his pessimism. And we remember in the draft riots, when the draft came out in 1863, there were huge riots across the North, and the worst one being in New York City. And because if you had $300, you could pay your way and buy your way out of the draft. Well, $300 back then would be like several thousand today. And the poor people, the Irish immigrants and the poor working class in New York and Philadelphia and all these cities across the North, $300, it might as well have been $3 million. They didn't have it and weren't going to get it. So they were the ones that were drafted into the Yankee Army, and they were the ones that were facing it out with the Confederates on the battlefield, and they were the ones that were getting killed and maimed and losing an arm or a leg or blinded. It wasn't the rich that were doing that. So the draft riots took place in New York City because of this draft of poor people. And the ones they went after in New York were the blacks. Now, they did go after the police stations to get weapons and armament and took over the island of Manhattan. But they also went after the blacks. And they burned a black orphanage, and they caught blacks out on the streets of New York and either beat them to death or hung them. And there were stories and newspaper reports of these blacks being hung from the lampposts in New York City. Now, remember, that's up north. This is not Charleston. It's not New Orleans. It's not Richmond. This is in Richmond. I mean, in New York City, that these blacks were being hung from the lampposts, and then they would set the bodies on fire and burn them. So this was their, during the war, this was their idea of throwing the cause of the war off on the blacks in New York. And that wasn't the only city. There were draft riots in Chicago and Pittsburgh and wherever the draft was implemented. But the worst ones were in New York. And if you ever saw that movie, The Gangs of New York, that was pretty much accurate at the end of the movie about the draft riots going on in New York City. And they tore down the circus there. P.T. Barnum Circus. There were elephants running up and down the streets in New York, and the only way they put the riots down, this was in July of 1863. They had to send New York troops who had just fought in the Battle of Gettysburg. They loaded them on trains and sent them back up to New York, and put them online on the streets of New York, and they just opened fire on these crowds and mowed them down. And there were estimates anywhere from 10 to 12,000 people that were killed in the draft riots in New York. So that was Lincoln the great emancipator. And I hope our listeners have learned a little something about actual history.
That they did. And if we had time, we would tell you about every single aspect of the slave trade was Jewish, put out by GTBFlyers.com. It's Goyim Defense. Anyway, we'll cover that more next week. Thank you so much, Jim. You did a masterful job. You always do. And I know the listeners appreciate it as much as I did. Anyway, God bless you, Blood Ripple Radio people. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much, Jim, for coming in and making this such a wonderful